It is Friday, March 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, UNICEF plans to help about 50,000 people fleeing Syria. Meanwhile, reports from Eastern Ghouta are dire.
My colleagues who were there saw destruction, deprivation, and despair.
Cambodian activists in Australia plan to protest Hun Sen's visit for a regional summit. And country music singer Kacey Musgraves has a new single, a new album, and a happy personal life. It's all ahead. A spokesman for the United Nations Children's Relief Organization says it has finalized plans to assist as many as 50,000 people fleeing the Syrian enclave of Eastern Ghouta. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights director said the largest exodus of people from the besieged area near Damascus occurred Thursday, since Syrian government forces launched a campaign to recapture it last month. Airstrikes in Eastern Ghouta continued for a second day Friday, killing dozens of people. The president of the International Committee of the Red Cross, Peter Maurer, said in a statement that his recent trip to Syria reinforces his view that wars across the region have reached a frightening new normal. Yolanda Jacquemet is a spokesperson for the ICRC in Geneva. She describes to me the current situation in the besieged area.
The situation is desperate. Yesterday, we had a humanitarian convoy that could enter Douma, the main city in Eastern Ghouta, with food for 26,000 people, which covers only a fraction of the needs. My colleagues who were there saw destruction, deprivation, and despair. The families they spoke to would start sobbing after just a few sentences. People are on their knees. Let's not forget that Eastern Ghouta has been cut from the world for years now, even before this latest escalation in fighting. And currently, people live in basements for fear of being killed. You have like three families per room in very poor hygiene conditions, with little food, with little drinking water, children absolutely terrified, and people are exhausted, and they just want one thing, for this to stop.
Have any food supplies been able to get through? I know there's some organizations that were attempting to.
So yes, yesterday this joint UN, ICRC, and Syrian Arab Red Crescent convoy brought food for 26,000 people for 1 month to Douma. The week before, we were able to bring the same amount of food. But again, this is not enough. And beyond food, people desperately need medicine and access to medical treatment, given that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of wounded due to the current fighting, and that most hospitals and clinics have been put out of commission by the fighting and they have run out of medicine and medical supplies.
Well, at this point, what can the international community do, in addition to organizations such as your own or the UN, to try to help the population there?
The international community has a duty under international law, under the law of armed conflict. The Geneva Convention states very clearly that states have a duty to use their influence with those fighting in a conflict. So basically, the duty of states in the world, they're all part of the Geneva Conventions, by the way, is to use their influence with the various parties to the conflict in Syria, and there are many, to remind them of their obligations. And their obligations are to allow humanitarian aid frequently and safely to people in need, to spare civilians during fighting, because civilians and hospitals and clinics and schools and water systems are not legitimate targets. They are not military targets, and to also allow access to people in detention and treat everybody humanely.
Is there anything else you would like to say?
I would like to say a word about the children. You have children who are being killed, who are wounded, who are hungry, who are terrified. No child should see what so many children are seeing in Syria today. And also, as this week the crisis in Syria entered its eighth year, we must remember that so many kids in Syria have seen nothing but destruction and death and hopelessness. They're not going to school. They're not playing. They are not, you know, happy children. They know that their parents are afraid that the following morning they might not be alive. So this is just not acceptable.
Yolanda Jacquemet, she's a spokesperson for the ICRC, who is based in Geneva. Time now for social media. Well, trending is hashtag Louise Slaughter. The 88-year-old congresswoman from Western New York State died Friday at a Washington, D.C. hospital following a fall at her home. The Democratic lawmaker had been the first woman to chair the House Rules Committee and was her party's ranking member on the panel when she died. Slaughter was serving her 16th term in the House, and her 31 years in the chamber made her its third longest-serving woman, according to the official House website. She chaired the Rules Committee from 2007 through 2010. The Kentucky-born congresswoman represented the Rochester, New York area. Slaughter was the chief force behind a 2012 law to ban insider stock trading based on congressional knowledge and require disclosure of market activities by lawmakers. She also helped write the Violence Against Women Act and a 2008 law designed to protect people with genetic predispositions to health conditions from facing discrimination from their employers or health insurance companies. Well, also trending is hashtag World Sleep Day. Penguin Books UK tweets, "There's a time for many words, and there's also a time for sleep." Homer, the Odyssey. Time to Change tweets, "It's hashtag World Sleep Day. Poor sleep can lead to and be a sign of mental health problems. If it seems like a mate is struggling, step in and lend them a hand." London Libraries tweets, "Well, here's a habit to keep. The Sleep Council says that more than 39% of people who are in the habit of reading before they go to sleep, sleep very, very well." Vala Afshar tweets, "Side effects from missing sleep, irritability, cognitive impairment, memory loss, impaired moral judgment, decreased creativity, risk of diabetes, tremors, aches, impaired immune system, heart disease, obesity, stress, ADHD symptoms, risk of stroke." And actor William Shatner tweets, "If it's hashtag World Sleep Day, why the heck am I awake?" And that's a look at social media. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. North Korea's top diplomat is in Sweden for talks that could lay the groundwork for a summit between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Six people are dead and 10 are hospitalized after a bridge collapse in Florida. The United States and South Korea drills will scale down and be shorter. And Donald Trump Jr.'s wife files for divorce after 12 years of marriage. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A Renaissance man is defined as a person who has wide interests and is an expert in several areas. The late, great Stephen Hawking, who died March 14th at age 76, was a true example of a Renaissance man. Professor Hawking helped us better understand the workings of our universe. Not only was he a renowned theoretical physicist, cosmologist, and author, Hawking was also a pop culture superstar. Over the years, he appeared in a number of movies and television shows, authored many best-selling books, and was even a guest performer on recordings by artists such as Pink Floyd and Monty Python. He gave wonderful advice when he told us to look up at the stars and not down at your feet. Try to make sense of what you see and wonder about what makes the universe exist. Be curious. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Russian voters prepare to go to the polls on Sunday. Activists are planning demonstrations against the visit of Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen to a regional summit in Australia. The long-serving Cambodian leader has threatened to punish anyone who protests against his presence at the summit. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
About 1,000 supporters of Cambodia's banned opposition say they'll protest Prime Minister Hun Sen's visit to Australia. They intend to rally outside the ASEAN summit in Sydney, despite threats from the veteran Cambodian leader that he would follow them home and assault those who plan to burn his effigy.
If you have the right to burn me, we have our right to beat you up. There's nothing wrong with that. I'll follow them home and grab them.
Loyalists to his Cambodia People's Party predict up to 3,000 supporters will join a counter-rally in Sydney to support the long-serving leader. His critics accuse him of a string of human rights abuses and believe his crackdown on dissent is tied to elections in Cambodia later this year. Jimmy Niam, who fled Cambodia in the 1980s, says the Prime Minister shouldn't be allowed into Australia.
He should not be welcome to this beautiful country. He got a lot of blood in his hand. I think he's a dictator. We know Hun Sen, almost 40 years that he's in power. He ruled the country with iron fist.
Former Australian Foreign Minister Gareth Evans has said the international community's response to Hun Sen's alleged abuses of power has been impossibly limp. Another world leader who's also facing intense global scrutiny is also expected at the ASEAN summit in Sydney. Myanmar's Aung San Suu Kyi has been widely criticised for her apparent lack of action in the face of violence towards Rohingya Muslims. It will be one of her first foreign appearances since large numbers of Rohingyas were forced to flee Myanmar. Outspoken President Duterte of the Philippines, who's been criticised for his violent war on drugs, won't be attending the gathering of regional leaders in Sydney this weekend. Australia hasn't commented directly on Hun Sen's threats to protesters, but said in a statement that it goes without saying that violence or the threat of violence isn't acceptable in Australia. This is the first time Australia has hosted an ASEAN summit. Regional trade and security are expected to dominate talks. ASEAN is the Association of Southeast Asian Nations and has 10 members. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Russians vote Sunday for president in an election which really boils down to one choice, Vladimir Putin, who has essentially been in power since late 1999. He faces only token opposition with two chief rivals, Boris Nemtsov, who is dead, and Alexei Navalny, who inspired mass protests last year in jail. Mr. Putin Wednesday campaigned in Crimea, the territory Moscow annexed from Ukraine in 2014. It's seen as having reasserted control over previously Russian territory despite international condemnation and sanctions. The Russian leader said annexation restored a historical justice. Kyle Wilson is a former Australian diplomat to Russia and is now a visiting fellow at the Australian National University. He tells International Edition's Victor Beattie he believes Mr. Putin remains quite popular at home, with a recent survey showing nearly half those polled consider him the country's second greatest leader, only behind Joseph Stalin. Wilson said Mr. Putin is likely to remain in power as long as he lives.
I mean, even Russian commentators are saying that not only will Mr. Putin be endorsed for another 6 years in what is being called an election, but really is, you know, a formalized voting procedure, a kind of ritual, but that he's likely to stay on until the end of his days, because to leave power in Russia, as Russian history shows, is very, very risky. In the whole history of Russia, only four Russian leaders have left power peacefully and alive. You've asked about the turnout. Well, we know, I think, from reliable reports that a lot of pressure will be put on people to turn out and vote, to actually turn up to the ballot box, so-called. I would have thought that what's probably very important for Mr. Putin is how many people turn out in Crimea. He will assume that Moscow won't vote for him because Moscow is one part of the country where, you know, he's failed to gain a majority before. And that, in a way, is a comment that says that, you know, Russian elections are not completely stage-managed. But I would have thought for Mr. Putin, absolutely crucial will be, does he get a big turnout in Crimea? Does he get a very positive endorsement in Crimea? And then, of course, he can say to the nation, look what the people of Crimea have said about me.
Where is the opposition?
The opposition is in a very difficult situation because, as you know, they are harassed. I think it's not going too far to say that they are persecuted. The genuine opposition is denied access to the state media. We know that a vast majority of Russians get their news from state television. We know that about 70% of Russians believe what they see and hear on state television. We know that state television is essentially 90% in the hands of the Kremlin. Therefore, the opposition has been using, to the best of its ability and ingenuity, social media, and it's been using it pretty effectively. But I think the other thing you'd probably say is that the opposition is in some disarray because it really has only one figure around whom it can coalesce. That figure is Navalny. The other potential figure, who was Mr. Nemtsov, was of course murdered only 300 metres from the Kremlin about 4 years ago. So the opposition is in an invidious position, which makes it all the more surprising that the Kremlin, Mr. Putin and his advisers, really seem to be quite perturbed by, you know, the challenge that the opposition is mounting. If you have a man as popular as Mr. Putin, who's been voted the second greatest man in history, who claims a popularity rating of something like 80%, why should such a man be so concerned to prevent Mr. Navalny from running against him as a genuine candidate? Well, the only logical answer can be that Mr. Putin and those around him really do see Mr. Navalny as a credible threat.
As for the current row between Russia and Britain over the poisoning of a former Russian double agent, Kyle Wilson said it works to Mr. Putin's domestic political advantage because he can portray himself as standing up against the enemies of Russia. As for what 6 more years of Vladimir Putin means for the world, Wilson said it means 6 years, at least, of dealing with a duumvirate of two bold, daring, and effective authoritarian leaders, Putin and China's Xi Jinping. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is International Edition. She's currently on tour with Little Big Town, and in the summer she opens for Harry Styles. But that is just part of what country artist Kacey Musgraves has in store in 2018. Nikki Strong is here with details. So, Nikki, what is Kacey up to?
Well, this past weekend, she performed at the Country to Country Festival in the UK. And not only did she premiere new music there, but she also made the announcement that she will be going on tour and she'll be headed to Europe starting in the fall, which is great. So October 21st, she's in Amsterdam. And then October 23rd through November the 4th, she tours the UK and then makes a stop in Ireland November 6th. More dates are to be expected and announced in the coming weeks, but this is great news for country fans all over the world.
And she's about to release a new CD as well.
Yes, it's called Golden Hour. It's out March 30th. She says the title was inspired in part by experiencing the solar eclipse during the summer. She was also born, by the way, in Golden, Texas. And she also shared that she feels like she's in the golden hour of her life. She just recently got married last year to singer-songwriter Rustin Kelly. And she just felt like she felt inspired to write songs about him and what he brought out in her that wasn't there before. She feels like all these things are coming to fruition for her in this golden hour.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
Well, what can we expect from this project?
Now, she describes it as trippy. And the first couple of singles that we've heard that's been released via the internet, fans who pre-ordered the CD got these two downloads. I can hear the trippy influence. She says her influences for the project are Neil Young, Sade, and the Bee Gees. That's quite diverse.
Yeah.
And she also says, and this is a direct quote from her, she says, "I was thinking about how there are different masks that we wear that represent different sides of us. None of the masks are solely us, but they're all us." And she says, on this record, there's the lonely girl, the blissful girl, the new wife, the girl that's missing her mom, the angry girl, the sarcastic girl. This sounds so Kacey Musgraves. The 60s sequin, Cruella de Vil with the beehive, the shy girl, the life of the party, the winner, the loser. She said they're all characters on this record, and none of them alone are me, but the golden hour is when they all come together and you see me as a whole.
Wow. You can hear Kacey Musgraves' music on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA One The Hits. VOA One streams online at voanews.com. Thank you, Nikki.
You're welcome.
You can have your space, cowboy.
That is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to the identification or location of Maulana Fazlullah. Further, the Rewards for Justice program is offering $3 million each for information on Abdul Wali and Mangal Bagh. All three men are associated with the Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan Terrorist Group, or TTP. The TTP opposes the Pakistani military, and among its stated goals is the expulsion of coalition troops from Afghanistan. The group has demonstrated a close alliance with al-Qaeda. Maulana Fazlullah is TTP's leader. Under his leadership, the TTP has claimed responsibility for the December 16, 2014 attack on a school in Peshawar, Pakistan, which resulted in the deaths of 148 people, including 132 students. Fazlullah also is responsible for the June 2012 beheading of 17 Pakistani soldiers, as well as the October 9, 2012 shooting of Pakistani schoolgirl Malala Yousafzai. The U.S. State Department tagged Fazlullah as a specially designated global terrorist in 2015. Abdul Wali leads Jamaat al-Ahrar, a militant group affiliated with TTP. Under Wali's leadership, this terrorist group has staged a number of attacks in Pakistan targeting civilians, religious minorities, military personnel, and law enforcement. Mangal Bagh is the leader of the Lashkar-e-Islam, another terrorist organization affiliated with TTP. Under his leadership, Lashkar-e-Islam operatives have attacked NATO convoys. The group finances itself through drug trafficking, smuggling, kidnapping, and fee extortion on transit trade between Pakistan and Afghanistan. Since its inception in 1984, the Rewards for Justice program has paid in excess of $145 million to more than 90 people who provided actionable information that helped bring terrorists to justice or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. For more information about Fazlullah, Wali, and Bagh, go to www.rewardsforjustice.net. We encourage anyone with information about these men to contact the Rewards for Justice office via email, info@rewardsforjustice.net, by phone 1-800-877-3927 in North America, or by mail, Rewards for Justice, Washington, D.C., 20520-0303, USA. All information will be kept strictly confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.